Welcome to Burning River Radio. I'm your host, Joe Koblitz, and I'm joined, as always, by a whole lot of Lotta. Justin Lotta.
What's up?
And I guess the big question on everybody's mind, Justin, this week is, did you watch the big fight?
I did catch the highlights. I thought that Miguel Cabrera's cheap shots were pretty awful. You know, the ones he missed, Gary Sanchez's cheap shots were pretty bad, and I thought Dylan Betances' throw was pretty cheap too. Yeah.
God damn it! If you're not two steps ahead of me tonight.
Favor. What?
I said you're two steps ahead of me tonight. That's exactly where I was going.
All right, nice. For once, we're on the same page.
Trick. You know, I of course I didn't watch the silly thing. I tweeted as it was going on that I'd rather watch Iron Fist fight Luke Cage because I like my violence to be fictional.
No.
And I think it's just funny, like, you don't watch that show either, probably.
No, but Luke.
I'm not going to make.
Sounds like a Mortal Kombat character.
You don't know who Luke Cage is?
No.
Okay. Whatever. I'm not going to recommend you watch it.
I thought you were talking about Mortal Kombat.
No, I'm talking about The Defenders, which is a TV show on Netflix.
Nope, out of that one too, sorry.
I enjoy it. If you're going to watch them, watch like Daredevil 1 and then Jessica Jones and then Luke Cage, and you probably don't need to watch the other ones. But
that sounds fantastic.
But I like Jessica Jones. It's got the guy from Doctor Who in it. You know, the Doctor Who.
Don't watch that either.
Wow. You're anti...
I just watch bad TV. I really do.
I'm going to say you're anti-social, not meaning you don't like to talk to people, but that you don't like things that... You don't like the normal topics that people bring up in society.
Like I don't like the NFL as much as everybody else? Yeah, I could agree with that.
I'm not in the NFL at all, and I have found about the Indians are playoff hunt. You should be watching only baseball, not preseason football. And now I don't care, because the thing is, let's say the Browns were in the playoffs and the Indians were playing spring training at the same time. Let's say the seasons weren't aligned the way they are, and it was a little different, and the NFL playoffs happened during spring training. See, like we never get the option to have the alternate world like that they have right now. If that was the case, I would be going to games in spring training and not caring at all about the playoffs. Because that's where the importance is in my life. And I understand there are some people that like football better. I mean, I talked to some guy today who wanted to boycott the NFL for reasons I'm sure you can guess. Not the good reasons.
No, okay.
No, it was the other thing, which is so dumb.
The smart
boycotting is dumb. Not what they're doing is dumb. That's not. They're fine. The players are fine.
Their former protest is better than another former protest. Gotcha.
Yeah, they're fine. Yeah, I don't care. Okay, so in the Indians' week this week, an interesting thing happened, I think. In that they played an entire series and didn't allow a run. And I don't know how to look that up. I was trying to look it up and see how many times that's ever happened, like for the Indians. And I don't even know where you would go to look that up.
I don't know. I think I saw Jordan Bastion tweet that it hasn't happened since 1956. And that was Mike Garcia, Bob Lemon, and Early Wynn, I believe.
Okay, so just two Hall of Famers and the fourth best Indians pitcher in the 1950s.
Yeah. So, you know, not a big deal. And compare that to today, you had this arguably the Indians' sixth and seventh best starters in the organization right now. In
wait, Josh Tomlin pitched?
Wow. Wow. Arguably your fourth and fifth best starters in the organization, according to your standards. Although I don't know how you can rank Ryan Mayer above Josh Tomlin, but
I rank Ryan Merritt above Josh Tomlin because he throws left-handed.
That's the stupidest argument you ever made. Like, maybe one of the worst points you've ever made.
Why?
Because of what hand he throws with?
I look at, and Royals fans, I saw we're talking about it. Oh, okay, Tomlin are identical. They're equally talented. They're identical. The guy who throws left-handed is going to have better results. That's just
no
history.
No.
You don't think so?
Where, if you can find something to prove it, sure, but I don't believe that's true.
That's going to be easier to look up than how many three-game shutouts they've had.
Well, look it up then, because I think it doesn't matter what hand you throw with. It's how good of a pitcher you are. And Ryan Merritt doesn't have the same command Josh Tomlin has, doesn't have the better secondary pitches, and doesn't have – I mean, isn't that the same track record? And Ryan Merritt
this
also,
number, but I'd love to compare Josh Tomlin's first couple seasons to what Ryan Merritt's done in his first couple starts, because I have a feeling he's significantly better.
Maybe.
Oh, I should have looked up hitting. That was stupid.
I mean, it's possible, but you're talking really small sample sizes, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, well, whatever. It doesn't matter. I think I would trust him more with anyone's start, and I'd like to see when Tomlin comes back, maybe Tomlin not be used in the rotation.
Maybe.
Why would you give me Tomlin that?
Six-man rotation and have Salazar in the bullpen.
How about this? I don't even need to look at right-handers. You want one stat. WRC plus against left-handers. 95.
Are you talking starting?
So I'm guessing what,
all left-handers.
I'm talking about all. Okay, all pitching.
Let's just do starting pitchers.
Against no, give me. You're too picky. Against right-handers, it's 97. I don't know how that's possible. I figured one of them would have to be over 100 if the other one was under 100. Okay. But they're both. So that's all of baseball this year. So slightly better, being a left-hander.
Oh, is that all starting pitchers, or is that just...
That's all pitchers in the entire major leagues.
Okay, that's I feel like that's a little biased towards relievers, because when you've got Andrew Millers and Aroldis Chapmans and those kind of relievers out there, that skews things in favor of left-handers.
And you've got Dylan Betances and Cody Allen. You're saying because there's fewer innings?
Yes.
It's 37,000 against
pitchers. Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, that's probably why the WRC is messed up, because it's not the equal amount of innings. But there's 109,000 plate appearances against right-handers, only about 37,000. So there is some skew there, but I do think that there's a benefit to being a left-handed pitcher overall.
There obviously is. I think that matters more from a reliever standpoint than it does a starter, though.
Okay. Well, this argument was silly.
Yes, it is.
The whole point was that the Royals fucking stink.
And the innings didn't even need – they had one of their best pitchers throw, and the rest were in the minors to start the year.
I mean, that was – the funniest thing is Carlos Carrasco pitched the final game, and they won 12-0. And Kate wrote the post game, and she puts up the Tribe Top 3 poll, which we do every single game. And she doesn't have the guy who pitched 7 shutout in the top Warriors. And I'm like, what else could he have possibly done? But there was so much offense that it kind of got overlooked, because he wasn't, if you look at like WRC plus takes into account not just what you do. It's not like just a home run or a strikeout or whatever, but how important it was to the game. And his probably wasn't that high for today, because they scored so many runs in the first and second innings that everything after that, he could have given up 6 runs and it would have been the same. It didn't matter that he struck out 8. He could have just done whatever, but he did. He really came in and dominated. I think it's it was hugely important to send a message, not just there, but they won 3 of 4 against, or 2 of 3 against the Twins. Then they won 2 of 3 against the Royals. And they split with Boston, but they're not really playing Boston. That doesn't,
well, they
like,
are
they're not competing directly against Boston. They got a whole month to figure that out, right? They need to figure out the Central right now, and they did. They swept them. They scored 4 runs in each of the first 2 games, then 12 in the 3rd game, and it really set up. I think it set up the last month perfectly. They have 4 more with KC. By then, KC should be completely out of it. They end the season with they have 3 with the Twins before they play through with the White Sox. I swear, like, this is the first time this year where I didn't go into a series like this and be like, well, this is the time where the Indians, if they just win all these games like they're supposed to, the division away. And I didn't say that, but going into this week, and they did it. They put the division away.
Well,
so.
They could have taken 1 of 3, and it wouldn't have mattered.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess, but to do it that dominantly now, instead, I mean, people literally, they changed the narrative. The narrative going into the series, the first series, the series in Kansas City, was Kansas City's coming up. They're going to compete against the Indians. It's going to be a tight race in the Central. Like, that was the narrative a lot of people were putting out there, which I never believed in the first place, but that was what they were putting out there. The narratives I'm seeing today, they're only 4.5 games behind Houston. They could catch them still. They're only a game behind Boston. They could catch them and get home field advantage, at least in the first round of the playoffs.
They're ahead of Boston now.
Oh, are they now?
Yeah, by a half game in the win column.
Okay, so maybe they were a half game behind then when I saw. But those are it completely changed the talking points. Not that it has any effect on the, and I don't believe any of this home road bullshit. I've never seen proof other than the home team wins, I believe, 52% of the time over the history of baseball.
And if you want to talk about playoff variance, about home road, it's that's the playoffs are. They're just variance. And if you look at the wild card games, look how often the road team in the wild card games has won. I don't have the number right in front of me that I can tell you. Since 2013, I think the road team has won more than the home team.
Wild sizes. I'm talking about in the history of the sport, hundreds of thousands of games, I'm sure. I don't do the math.
Right.
Of,
I mean, but we're talking about playoffs. So we're talking about
in the playoffs, you're talking about a much smaller amount of games. I think over time, it will eventually work out to be the same as it would be anywhere. Which is, I believe it's 52% for any game, and for extra inning games, it goes up to like 55% favoring the home team. Because there's a definite advantage in extra innings that doesn't exist anywhere else, where if you score a run as the home team, you win the game.
In most cases, yeah.
As long as you didn't give up the run first. Whereas if you're the away team, you give up. You know, it's kind of like how they always come up, when the Indians score first, they're this record. Well, yeah, that's because they scored. If you score at all, and somebody, I can't remember if it was in the Fangraphs thing or maybe it was a Bill James thing from years ago, but somebody says something like, anytime you score, you are now forcing the other team to score twice. Not just once, but score twice. And that's a big deal. Even if it's just one run, you are now forcing them to score 2 runs. Whereas they, you know, by scoring first, it gives you that advantage. And that is real. Like, if you look, I think it maybe 60% of the time the team that scores first wins.
And, I mean, it's worked well for the Indians, but I mean, any team that scores first is going to win more often than not.
So in the first inning, that means you might have an advantage over the starting pitcher, which it was definitely the case in the finale.
Just a little.
But I mean, when your name is Skagway,
Skagway,
you're not going to correct me.
I'm assuming there was some bad joke in there I was supposed to not get. So
okay, Skagway is an island in Alaska. Skoglund was the pitcher today.
See, I didn't get the joke. See,
It wasn't really a joke. I was just making fun of his name.
As if his name wasn't bad enough.
Skaglung is a stupid fucking name. But shout out to Skagway, Alaska. What a great place.
And then the guy they came brought in to relieve him was making his major league debut and gives up a grand slam to Yan Gomes.
Well, I mean, Yan Gomes is going to get those grand slams. You know that.
all 44 of his RBIs now are like you could probably say 90% are home runs.
You know, Gomes, because Perez had a good game or a good series too.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the year, we had discussions on this, and I believe maybe we were both in agreement that, like, we were like, why isn't – I think you even wrote a piece on it. Maybe it was Gavin about why isn't Roberto Perez a starter. You wrote that. Okay, so you wrote that, and I was in agreement with you. Roberto Perez should be the starter. They're only giving it to Gomes because he's been here longer and he makes more money. And halfway through the season, they're going to be playing 50-50 at best. And that never happened. They kept playing Gomes, and they still play Gomes more. But every time Perez goes on a run, I'm like, see, he should be starting. And then Gomes will go on a little bit of a run, too. And I'm like, well, maybe Gomes should be starting. It's so they're very equal hitters. They're both right-handed, which hurts. I think if you had a right and a left-handed catcher, it would make a significant difference because they're both better hitters against left-handed pitchers. Gomes.
What if you had a switch hitting catcher?
Well, like Carlos Santana?
That's not where I was going with it, but sure.
I know that's not where you're going with it. That's why I said it. No.
Would a switch hitting catcher make a difference?
Who else was a switch hitting catcher? Well, if you had a switch hitting catcher, he would be considered a lefty. Let's say Roberto Perez was a switch hitter, and he hit better against right-handers than Gomes did. Then he would just hit against right-handers and Gomes would hit against left-handers. Like, I don't think – like, I know what you're talking about. And he's a significantly better hitter than either of them as far as we're aware. So that – like, to me, he would just be the starter and those guys would be on the bench. Not this season. In 2 years.
Would he be on the bench next month?
No. No. I'd like to talk about that some. We've got Josh Tomlin's coming back on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
No, Thursday.
Wednesday.
No, Thursday? Wednesday. There we go. One of these days. They don't play on Thursday. So yeah, Josh Wednesday. Tomlin's coming back on Wednesday. So they're going to have to make a stupid roster move, which is annoying.
It's going to be – oh, yeah. Wow.
Because Wednesday's still in August, so they're going to have to make a roster. They already sent down Ryan Merritt, and I told one person, but I could tell everybody, don't freak out that they sent down Ryan Merritt because the 10-day rule, where you have to be in the minors for 10 days,
doesn't apply to
the 26th man in a doubleheader. So his next start was going to be Friday anyway, which is the doubleheader. Well, it could have been Wednesday, but they decided to go with Tomlin on Wednesday. So by sending him down, they were able to – for Tomlin to come back on Wednesday, and Merritt will start on Friday like he would normally have in a perfect world. Then he can go back down to AAA to finish out his 10 days, and he'll come back up, and he'll be on regular rest again. I doubt he pitches a game in AAA. If he does, maybe he would pitch Monday, maybe like 2 innings just to keep him, you know, loose.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt he... He makes a full start, like a 5-inning start in AAA. So that's one guy we know will be back up. Eric Gonzalez is already up. I think it seems like initially it sounded like Lonnie Chisenhall should have been back Sunday, which is the day we're recording that. He's obviously not back. And now I've heard they may be pushing him off till Friday.
Because they don't want to make a roster move, yeah.
I think it's because they feel confident enough with Jay Bruce.
Really, you think?
Well, and the current offense. I mean, they scored 12 runs without Jay Bruce.
That's true. So,
I mean, Yandy Diaz is hitting. Giovanni Ursula is hitting. As they say, it's contagious, as Rick Manning would say in his great wisdom.
Do you think Diaz is going to be the move for for Tomlin?
It could literally be any of those guys. I mean, Eric Gonzalez is up now, right?
Do they still have to wait for the 10 days, though, even if the roster's expanded?
Yeah, I believe they have to wait 10 days for that.
So even on Friday when they call, or is it Saturday that's the first, or Friday?
Friday is the first, which is the doubleheader. So like I said, they're going to make Merritt. They haven't announced this yet, but I'm assuming that Merritt will be the 26th man for that doubleheader.
I'd be surprised if he wasn't.
Clevinger is also scheduled. Like, that would be his slot to pitch that day. Yeah, so Eric Gonzalez is up right now. And when you have Diaz, Gonzalez, and Urshela, to me, you just send Gonzalez down. And that kind of – you don't mind missing him for 10 days, especially because there's another shortstop, second baseman I'd like to see them call up for September call-ups.
Oh, God.
Really? I have to see it. I have to see if he's on the
40. Michael Martinez back?
He is not on the 40-man roster, unfortunately.
I don't know if that proves anything. I don't know if that means anything.
But I like Eric Stametz a lot.
He's also not on the 40-man roster.
That's who I was talking about is not on the 40-man, is Eric Stametz.
Oh, and Michael Martinez isn't either.
No, I know. Well, they already cut Diego Moreno, who every time anybody asked, well, who are you going to cut to bring up X, whether it's Eric Kratz or Adam Moore or
Diego Moreno.
Or Stametz. It was always, it's Diego Moreno because he's terrible and there was no reason for him to sign him in the first place. So that was like the easy, it's kind of like the last 4 years how we always said it would be Austin Adams. It's like, who are you going to take out the 40 to fit him? Austin Adams. And it never was.
We always have to have one or two guys on the 40 that you can easily DFA to move somebody else up. And is that going to be Craig Breslow? Because like, I assume they want to keep Craig Breslow now until Miller's back.
Yeah, I'd say you have to keep
Breslow or Olson in the postseason.
You have to keep Breslow until Miller's back. And I believe Olson will be in the postseason no matter what because they're going to want two lefties.
They're not going to take three lefties into the postseason.
How many? Three?
They're not going to take all three in the postseason.
They could if one of them was Ryan Merritt. I don't think they'll take Breslow. Breslow's a fit. Sometimes what they'll do is they'll play out the playoffs in Columbus, which I don't even know if the Clippers are. I think
they're
the Clippers
currently not in a playoff position, no.
But they're within striking range.
I mean, close enough, but probably not close enough where they're actually going to make it.
Oh, there's only 1 week left, so they should pretty much know.
I think they're three games out. If I read. Gavin's recap last night, right? I think the three game's out.
Okay. I hope you didn't read mine because they were full of depression and angst.
I usually try to avoid reading the ACL and DSL recap, especially.
DSL ones are the worst. The DSL Indians finally won three games, and it's because they played three against the Indians Brewers.
Oh, God. I hope it goes away at the end of the year. I hope that's the last time they do that co-op.
I wrote an article about it earlier in the season that I thought they should delete it, and the only comment I got was, no, they should have as many roster positions as possible. I'm like, no, it doesn't. They don't. They have like six guys on that team, and they've got way more than that are terrible throughout the rest of the minors. They should just start cutting some people. I think that entire team was for two guys, for Mackie Sandia and Kelk Boone and Yahir Varela, because they didn't have enough – both at their Varela is a starting pitcher and Kelk Boone is the shortstop, and they already had Marcos Gonzalez at shortstop, and they wanted Gonzalez to start and Kelk Boone to start every game. So like, let's make a new team just so this guy can play shortstop every day. It's stupid. Anyway, back to the 40. I'm looking at this roster. It's difficult to find an easy cut. I've got one guy that I'm sure you'd be probably annoyed at if I said it.
Dylan Baker.
Yeah, that would be it.
I don't. I was talking about this with a friend today. I don't think anybody's going to claim Dylan Baker if they cut him. He's not.
Yeah, I mean, just like Richardson, they cut, DFA'd, let him go, and he's back a week later. Yeah, so it isn't like it's necessarily a gone forever type of thing. I mean, Robertson's a guy that could potentially help this team right now, but then you have to do another 40-man move. And really,
it's too, there's too many guys in the roster, because you know Tyler Naquin's coming up. You know Abel Monte. I'm pretty sure Abel Monte's on the DL just for roster reasons. That's what it seemed like to me. Hurt, but I doubt it's that bad.
And the fact is, Michael Brantley is still in a boot and can't run, or maybe not in a boot, but he can't run yet.
I think he's out of the boot. He just isn't running.
And you can't guarantee anything that Brantley's going to be back. So you need – now, you are guaranteeing Chisenhall's going to be back, because I think he's been healthy for a couple days already. But you need Naquin up just in case something else happens. I'm not saying to start Naquin or even use him as more than a pinch runner.
Mm-hmm.
But you're already down three outfielders right now. I mean,
yeah, Nate, I think you can assure Naquin will be up, and you can assure that Almonte will be back and Chisholm will be back. So then you're going to have like seven outfielders.
Yeah, and every single outfielder that is on the 40 man will be in the major leagues. And I think that there's a point to that, because did you just give me like a Mario coin for that?
Yes. For your point.
Okay. So if you look at this, the roster right now, every single player on the infield, outfield, DH, except for Tyler Naquin, is already in the majors or on the disabled list.
Mm-hmm.
Of the only players that are not are pitchers and one catcher.
Which is what?
Is John Armstrong up? No, he went down.
Armstrong's down, but yeah. And then Mejia.
Yeah, yeah, so Armstrong, Baker, Crockett.
Oh, I forgot Crockett's on the 40 because, you know, Plutko, Crockett.
Technically Merritt, Morimondo, Plutko. And then you've got your DL guys.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Crockett winds up being a DFA.
No, not after the way they've treated him.
No.
But it's funny. But what's funny about that, and of course the situation is different slightly, but Jesus Aguilar was with Austin Adams, Jesus Aguilar was always a, why don't they just cut him? Like, why are they, like, you could save a spot on the 40 man, just cut Aguilar. Just do it. Just let him go. You're never going to use him. But going into this offseason, before they signed Encarnacion, he really was their only option at first base beyond Santana, and Santana's a free agent at the end of the season. So I can see why they didn't cut him. Whereas Crockett is not their only option. They have Olsen. They have Miller for one more full season after this year. They have Merritt, Morimondo, Plutko. Merritt, Morimondo, and I guess that's it, right? Yeah. Of the starters in AAA.
Yeah.
So they've got those options there.
Well, the fact they signed Craig Breslow and put him on the 40 and called him up instead of Crockett probably says everything you need to know about how they feel about Crockett. If you didn't already know, I mean, that was probably the final straw for Crockett's career here.
Yeah, that does make sense as well. And I mean, I'm looking at the minor leaguers, like at the AA, they've got David Spear, who isn't very exciting, Matt Whitehouse, who isn't that exciting. I still think the top lefty reliever is Ben Krauth, and he's probably 2 years away.
So maybe keep Crockett. I mean, I don't know. I just think the fact they signed Breslow and brought him up before.
No, I think you're right. I think they keep Olsen and Miller for next season, and they dump Crockett. I mean, why? But I hope that Dylan Baker. I don't want to say anything bad about Dylan Baker. I didn't tell you a story from spring training. My parents came out not to see spring training. They don't care about that. But they happen to come out every year. It seems the first week that camp opens, they always come out in February, like the middle of February. Probably because it's freezing in Ohio and they want to get out of there.
Don't blame them.
But so my mom is at the practice watching the practice with us, and she's got a ball and she's got a marker, autographs for someone back home, but she doesn't know who to ask. And the only person she asked was Dylan Baker, and it's because that's her maiden name. So she gave it to my grandma, whose last name is still Baker. And I thought that was funny. So that was, you know, and then I've seen him so much this year because he keeps coming back to Goodyear. He was here for spring training pitching. He was here for extended spring. He's gone now.
Didn't Dylan Baker win the competition for, no, was that Cody Anderson who won the pitch for the pitchers for the Iron Man?
The sprint competition. I don't remember.
Was Baker? I think it was Baker who won it.
It might have been, but the fact is,
Greg Allen, I think, who won it.
You don't want to be on the 40-man roster in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's never a good sign. At least not this time of year. In spring training, it's great, but now it's not a good sign. And I wish they would have protected Santander over him last year.
Well, that, I mean, neither could stay healthy. Although Santander was actually healthy all year last year, whereas Baker, I don't think has been healthy full time since 2014. Unfortunately.
Well, I mean, you want to, but if you're just going to rank pitchers, and obviously that's something we've done a lot of, you know, ranking players, he's nowhere near the top of your right-handed pitcher list if you're just looking at talent. Don't even look at risk. Just look at talent.
Well,
and you're gonna have McKenzie, Bieber, Merriweather, like Chang, Esparza. All those guys are going to be ahead of him, and they're in double and triple A already.
Here's the other thing too, because when you get into 40 man spots, you're not just thinking short term, you're also thinking long term, you know, no matter what you do. So if they cut Baker or they cut Crockett, they're still thinking about it long term, because if they DFA Crockett, I'm almost positive someone's gonna pick him up. I don't think there's any way he clears because he's left handed, like you said.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I don't think Baker would be clean. I think Baker would make it through at this point because of how. But if you start thinking about 40-man moves, then who, you know, because, okay, at the end of the year, Shaw's and Santana are free agents. You know, Craig Breslow is going to be off the 40.
And Austin Jackson.
Yeah, Austin Jackson. And, you know, so you think about that stuff, but you also got to start thinking about who they're going to protect in the offseason. I don't know in front of me who's got to be on the 40-man roster to avoid Rule 5 next year. I know Eric Haas does off the top of my head.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the one guy you've brought up continually in the last month or so is Eric Haas, and he's a catcher in AA, if you don't know. He has some power. When I saw him rehabbing last year, his arm was very impressive. I'm not going to ever judge a AA bat playing against rookie ballers.
Yeah.
So I won't say anything about his bat, but his arm was impressive because you can kind of isolate that and see it irrelevant of the level he's playing. I believe I've heard he calls a good game. I'm just running off of anecdotes here that other people have told me.
Yeah.
So he's a player you don't really want to lose. So now that's another guy. I mean, Stamets has to be near the point where they're going to have to protect him too. Pretty much anyone in AAA usually.
I don't know. See, I don't say that makes any sense. I mean, if you're just spitballing names, he does. But I mean, I don't think they will, just because you have Gonzalez. But I think, well, Ronnie Rodriguez already was at that point, and he went unclaimed. Nelly would have to be protected. I don't think he matters.
I think there's no way they protect Nelly.
No, I don't think he needs to be. And I think Bobby Bradley's got one more year before he has to be protected.
Oh, at least.
But I mean, my point was, I think the only name I know off the top of my head has to be protected next year is Eric Haas. And you have to think about the 40-man in terms of long term, even if you're making short term moves like, you know, Breslow and Crockett and all that stuff. And you also got to remember the offseason. You have to re-add Cody Anderson, who comes off the 60-day DL, and you have to potentially re-add Boone Logan if they pick his option up. So those are two guys.
Yeah, he has an option, though, and I could see them not using his option. I think they will use Josh Tallman's and Michael Brantley's options, but those are two other guys that could potentially leave.
They would do it.
But the reason why we're bringing this up now, I mean, obviously a lot of this is a Rule 5 talk that could be in December, but it matters now because the first guy every team always brings up, or at least they should bring up in September for September call-ups, is a catcher.
A third catcher, yeah.
Because that's – it's not an important – I think if you had 26 roster spots, a lot of teams would carry three catchers. But when you have 25, it's not that important. If one of your catchers gets hurt, you replace him with the other one, and then the next day you call up somebody new. Whereas – but you can – like if you had that third guy, then all of a sudden you can pinch hit for catchers. You can pinch run for catchers. You can do a lot more strategically during the game by having three catchers. It's not just an emergency – well, it's partly an emergency because a lot of times they don't want to take out a catcher at all because they're like, well, what if the other catcher gets hurt? Then we have no one we can put back there.
Right.
So it gives you both the strategic option of we can do this multiple times, and it gives you the emergency option of we can do it once and then not be screwed if the catcher does get hurt.
And so
they're going to bring
Mejia or making a roster move to get Eric Kraft. I think Eric Kraft is probably the only other option.
I like Kratz more than Moore, and I'm telling you that the Indians have to like him because last year when they brought up twice, they had to bring up Moore. And each time it was for like one game and he didn't play, and then they immediately, the second time they got Jimenez.
Right.
I believe it was. Maybe it was the first time.
They've been 2 years in a row with him now where he's come up.
Yeah, and they brought him up as an emergency, but they won't let him get into a game. So Kratz has to be ahead of Moore.
Or, if it's not Mejia, I guess if you make a 40-man move and you don't want to do Kratz, I don't know. I guess Eric Haas wouldn't totally surprise me.
Now, see, I would say my argument for Haas would be next year in AAA, who are your starting catchers going to be? Who are your two catchers in AAA going to be next year? It's not going to be Adam Moore and Eric Kratz.
It's got to be Mejia and Haas.
That's ideally, right? Well, if they don't protect Haas, then he's not going to be on the Clippers. He's going to be on some other team.
Right. He will definitely get claimed.
So they have to protect Haas by December. Why not protect him now and call him up and make him your other catcher? It doesn't matter if you start his clock because you're not considering him a future starter anyway.
Maybe, yeah.
So start his clock. Who cares? It is what it is. Then next year you can bump him. You can use his first option and bump him down to AAA. He wouldn't even have to use an option this year because he hasn't been on the 40-man yet. So if you immediately put him on the 40-man and call him up, no option used.
Now you protect him.
You know,
yeah.
you got 3 years, and you can mess. If you do then think he's going to be a starter, you can play around with the service time after that, and it's fine. Now they could also call up Mejia, which I'm sure a lot of fans would like. But I honestly think Mejia would be in Columbus right now if they thought he was Major League ready.
I think he would be in Columbus right now if Columbus was going to be in the playoffs. And I don't think they're going to be, and neither is Akron.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would do that just to get him extra playing time. They've done that before where they – Mike Clevenger last year. I think – no, 2 years ago. They called him up from AA to AAA just to pitch in the playoffs, and I think it was just to get him that extra playing time. They wanted to get him a couple extra starts in.
And get the playoff experience, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's just because they're playing longer. In previous seasons, the Indians have sent down major leaguers on rehab assignments to pitch in, you know, to play in the playoffs just because they didn't have anywhere else for them to play. So there's a benefit of those games existing.
Right.
The playoff games in the minors. Which I believe Lynchburg clinched both the first and second half, right?
They did, yeah.
So they'll definitely be in at least one round of the playoffs. So that could be where you see some names go, maybe from Lake County or
Dalbert Series is the only one I can think of.
Connor Capel.
I think Lynchburg's got so many outfielders, I doubt it. Like, I guess maybe, but I guess you could see Capel, or you could see maybe Lee Jen Shu. But I definitely, Dalbert Sear is going to be the only one, for sure.
They already have three catchers on Lynchburg.
Yeah, but, I mean, Shu is basically DH.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, there could be some moves there, but it's not really going to affect the upper levels. And I believe I saw a rule when they were talking, Chisenhall recently rehabbed with Akron in Erie,
mm-hmm.
which is not, usually they play with the home team, but Erie is so close anyway, they could play on the road. And one of the Tigers fans said, is that allowed? I didn't think they were allowed to jump down levels, in a playoff hunt. And somebody in the know apparently said, you're not allowed to drop, I believe it was two levels in the minors during the playoffs.
Right, you can't bring guys assignment. Down from Columbus to go to Lynchburg. You can bring
down from Akron to go to Lynchburg. Yeah, so if they wanted to, I that would be kind of a huge fuck you to Mejia to send him down to Lynchburg so he could play in the playoffs when he's already on the 40-man. They could easily call him up to the majors.
Are they gonna lose out on an extra month of him? I mean, he's not gonna play if he comes up anyway. Maybe other than pinch hit. And I think that's exactly what they'll do. I actually do think that's what's going to happen.
I think that they call up Haas or Kratz. And if they call up Kratz, I think at the end of the season they release him and they give that spot to Haas.
I guess that's a 40, but then you got to make a 40-man move at Baker, yeah. So there's your DFA-able guy.
That's what I'm talking about.
I don't know. I mean, you don't think it's going to be Mejia at all?
Not this year. But, I mean, I don't have the sources that you do or whatever. I'm just going off of what they've done in previous seasons. There were guys they could have called up last September and didn't that I thought they probably should have. There were guys the year before I thought they should have called up and they didn't that I thought they should have, including Francisco Lindor back in, 2014. Like, every year there's guys that you think, oh, they should probably call that guy up and give him a – because there's no better time. They just killed the Royals twice, and they beat the Twins, and they play them again, and they could put this division away in a week. If the division is put away, you know, they're up by 8 games, 10 games. By the time the AAA season ends, there's no reason that anybody that they consider a part of the future should be on the major league team. That's Plutko, that's Morimondo, you know, the guys that are on the 40-man roster. And to me, it's also Eric Stamets, maybe Ronnie Rodriguez, who I would assume they have to protect as well because they had to last year.
They should have had him do it last year, but they didn't, you know, they weren't concerned. I don't know if they think he's going to have to this year. I don't know. But do you think anybody on the 40 not named Dylan Baker should be up next month?
You know what? With this particular 40, I do, because they didn't protect anybody other than Mejia. I don't think they need to bring Mejia up.
But you think they should?
I guess maybe that was, no, I don't.
Okay.
I think you give Mejia a month off, maybe have him go play the AFL and try to start him in the majors next season, or start him in AAA and by May or June, he's in the majors.
Do you think, and this is the same conversation, if they don't DFA him to open a spot for Eric Kratz or anybody else, do you think they call Kyle Crockett up? Do you think they'll bring a third lefty up before Miller?
Yeah, that's,
I assume Miller's not going to be back by next Friday.
That I'm aware of. Although they said he was only going to miss another 7 days after Saturday. 7 to 10 days after Saturday. There's no reason to play around with 3 days, so you make him miss the whole 10 days. You know, well, and he'd be back.
He was just not going to throw for 5 days.
Okay, yeah, so maybe he's back by, September 8th or something like that. I don't know. You know.
Maybe.
But I think he's still going to miss a full week of September. But if they don't call up Crockett, then they might as well DFA him.
Right, exactly. I think that's that's going to be what's interesting, is if they don't call him up, then you can pretty much guarantee that if he's not DFA'd this year, that he will not be here next year.
There's one guy that does fly in the face of that team logic, and that's Giovanni Ursula. Up for last September, or at any point in time in the entire season, and now all of a sudden, they love him again.
Yeah, and if Deonny Diaz makes one error, then you know they're gonna kill him for defense, and he might never see him again. Because I think they're trying to avoid. We could have a whole podcast on this because I think there's a lot to talk about right now with Deonny Diaz. But if Diaz makes one mistake in the field, then you know Francona might just banish him back to Akron. But you know Giovanni Ursula, who can. Doesn't have one barrel all season, you know, is they love him again.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a piece on this on Friday, I think, maybe Saturday, recently. So if you look on bringerbaseball.com, it'll be up towards the top about the Indians' weird platoons, that it's not a right-left platoon. I guess it is with Zimmer and Jackson, but it isn't really. It's not because Jackson has been hitting right-handers fine. A right-left issue. But Ursula and Diaz are both right-handed hitters, and they're platooning. And so how do you decide when you start the defense platoon and when do you start the offense platoon? And it's interesting because their WAR is almost identical. At least it was before. I haven't checked it the last couple days. They've both hit really well. So it's possible it's different now. But their WAR was almost identical back on Friday. But all of Ursula's came defensively, and all of Diaz's came offensively. Or he was even defensively, but
sure,
you know, better offensively. So it's interesting that they're equal players. But they aren't equal to the Indians, because the Indians score, believe it or not, among the best teams in baseball, and they are defensively and a great offensive club. And you get that choice, you go with Ursula.
Sure.
And he's got like a 25 UZR per 150. It's something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just he has made an error or two or missed it. He made a diving play and missed it the other day. But he's been incredible.
Maybe you just picked a matchup. I don't know. You look at the pitcher on the mound and you think, okay, well, Diaz should do well against this pitcher, or we need offense against this pitcher, like, you know, that's a stale game.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is if you have a pitcher on the mound where you think, well, this is going to be one of those days we're only going to score a run or two, then you go with the offense and you hope, because you can always take him out.
Right.
If you score five runs, you just take him out and put Ursula in.
And they did that this week.
Yeah, and if you think you're going to score five runs, then you start Ursula, because you can always pinch hit for him if you didn't score anything. Like, you can fix the mistake, but you want the in the majority of the games you should have Ursula in anyway, because he's going to get more chances, and you don't know when those chances are going to come up at third base. Offensively, you know that when the chances are going to come up. He's literally coming to the plate with a guy on second. You know that chance is up, and you can flip it. But defensively, you never know when someone's going to hit a ball there.
And look, I mean, well, just look what they did early in the year when Kipnis was on the DL the first time. They had Diaz make the team. Literally, I think almost every game they were winning by the sixth inning, Michael Martinez came in to play third.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're not deviating from that. I'm pretty sure that Diaz hasn't finished a game all week except for today, because they were up 12-0. I think every other game he played in this week, he didn't finish it because of defense.
Well, yeah, and Ursula came in and played shortstop.
Today.
So he wasn't also available to play third base. Otherwise, well, maybe he would have.
But at 12-0, they did that to get Lindor off his feet instead of
Diaz. And then they pulled Ramirez too for Gonzalez. I think I like that. I think it's a good move. Obviously, the best move is to have Jason Kipnis play second base and Ramirez play third base, because those WARs that are identical are both negative.
Here's
for Diaz and Ursula.
While we were talking about rehab a minute ago, too, I forgot to bring this up, because this is also an issue. When We don't know.
Yeah, my shoulder hurts so bad, though.
What?
I said my shoulder hurts so bad. Thanks for bringing it up. Oh, my rehab is not going very well.
You're probably not going to make it back for the playoffs, unfortunately.
No, absolutely not. There's no way.
There's no timetable for Brantley to come back. As of right now, there's no timetable for Miller. I don't think they're going to send Salazar in a rehab appearance. I don't know if they're going to keep him in the rotation of the bullpen. I don't think it matters because I think you just have to operate with the fact that Salazar may just not stay healthy. That's maybe what it is. But that wasn't my point. My point was for Miller and for Chisholm, or for Brantley, is by the time they're both ready to come back, everybody except for Lynchburg will be done playing. And I think Mahoning Valley might make the playoffs, but I don't think you can send either of them to Mahoning Valley, can you?
Yeah, you could. You can send a rehab guy anywhere. The instructs start out here.
Well, you're not going to fly Kyle out to Arizona late and bring September. Him back.
You're not. They did it with Danny Salazar last year.
Well, that was after going into the postseason. He wasn't coming back until.
I think absolutely they would.
Even if it was just for like one or two. I mean, Brantley's going to need. Yeah. Brantley's going to need four or five games minimum. Miller, maybe two, maybe three.
Yeah, I think if instructs were the only thing going on at the time, I think absolutely they would send him down here.
Instead of Mahoning Valley? Because they're not, I mean.
Well, no, they won't. Mahoning Valley will be over by then. Instructs don't start until after every season is done. They get like 3 weeks off in between. So this would be like the last week of the season if they're coming back.
Well, I'm thinking like, let's say they come back the second last week of the season, theoretically.
Then they got to pitch against their teammates. I mean, they did that with somebody last week was pitching against like Abraham Almonte or Jason Kipnis.
That was Tomlin during a simulated game.
Yeah, so they'll just have to do that.
Yeah,
because there's
that's the other issue is that you don't have any rehab games left for these guys to get into. I mean, you're not going to send any of these guys to Lynchburg.
Well, and I guess that's also the benefit of being ahead in the division, that they don't have – they're not in this tightly contested race that they can give guys starts who maybe aren't going to play very well the first couple times out there. They can give Tomlin spot starts to try to see if he's okay for the postseason. And if they put Tomlin in and he gives up 10 runs in three innings, they could still give him another start because they can afford to lose two games.
True, and I think they're going to try to avoid pitching Miller on back-to-back days initially.
Well, they
might not do it at all.
Said that all season, but they...
No, I mean...
He's an addict.
They didn't say they were going to pitch him on back-to-back days at all, but I mean, I don't think they're going to now.
They said they were
going to
take it easy on him all season.
And they did, right. Yeah, no, Francona never reined it in, shockingly, you know. In the postseason, you don't get a word about back-to-back days because he might go two innings and then you have a day off, no matter what.
I will say this to end this show here. Last year, there were two or three games towards the end of the season where they had bullpen starts, where I think Zach McAllister got one start. I think Dan Otero may have gotten a start.
They did.
I think Merritt pitched in one of them. I don't know that I think his first start was in the postseason, so I don't think he started, but he maybe like pitched three innings.
No, Merritt pitched against KC in September.
Yeah, did he start though?
Yes.
He might. Okay, it was a start. Then it was a second start against the Blue Jays, but it wasn't. It was like three innings. Because they even said the other day when he pitched five and a third or six and a third or whatever that it was the longest he'd ever been on a mound in a major league game. There won't be any bullpen starts this year. I could just about guarantee it.
Unless you have the same crap happen again.
No, even if it happens with Merritt and Morimondo and Plutko and you know, and all is with they already have a 6-man rotation once Tomlin gets back. With all these guys, they will not have to do a bullpen start. They can skip Kluber as many times as they want to, and they still won't have to do a bullpen start. Which, again, last year didn't matter. They still won some of those games. I believe. Maybe they won one of three of them. But
I think it was, well, they won the game that Carrasco got knocked out of by the line drive.
Okay. Well, either way, they should not have to have a game like that. And there should be enough guys in the bullpen that they should never have to worry about killing Shaw, Allen. September should mostly be about taking it easy. Try to clinch the division in the next week and then try to coast a little bit. Let these guys hang out because there's so many hurt players already. I mean, you fuck up Kluber or somebody, then this thing's over. Then I'll pull a Hoynsie.
Yeah.
sure. Is the season over yet? I Hoynsie blocked me, and I'm so sad. I don't know if the season's over yet.
I don't know. He blocked me too, so I can't give you those answers anymore. I was your one source.
I was thinking maybe
I blew it.
Maybe when Salazar,
I think I'm pretty close to Dennis Maniloff blocking me too. So.
Yeah, so I don't follow him, so that wouldn't affect me.
Well, I mean, all the playing now that the playing dealer doesn't have Zach Meisel anymore, I'm pretty sure all the playing dealer guys are on the verge of just blocking me. So I'm out of sources there.
Okay. Well, if somebody's listening to this and they're following Hoynsie, make sure you tell me if he says the season's over, because I really want to know. Then I can stop watching, right? Stop writing these articles.
You can start worrying about Arizona Fall League.
Yeah. I was going to say you can watch Game of Thrones, but it's over.
Oh, darn. Isn't there one season left of that?
It's over until next year. Yeah, there's one season left.
Right. Well.
Ice Dragons, baby.
Ice baby?
Ice Dragons. It's Ice Dragons.
Ice baby.
You ruin everything, Justin.
That's my goal. That's the only thing I bring into this podcast. I ruin things.
You're gonna. That's your song.
Ice baby.
That's your song that you're gonna sing.
Okay.
Last week you wanted me to sing NSYNC.
Yes.
turn the show off, Justin. We're done. Okay. have a great week, guys.